The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to The Christian Outlook, the weekly radio program that sorts through the issues in our fast-changing world in a way that honors your Christian faith. This week in The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, I'm Kevin McCullough. Great to be with you. This week, as Putin wages a brutal war on Ukraine, our energy prices spike yet again.
This is about resetting the global economy.
The West unites to push back on Putin's propaganda machine.
They're doing yeoman's work in dislodging the primacy of Russia's narrative.
Will Putin use a nuclear weapon? It may work against his first objective.
His number one goal is staying in power.
We'll hear from a Ukrainian Christian who has watched his city get destroyed.
I'm feeling extremely sad that it's happening this way.
And Christian radio making a difference in Ukraine.
When the chips are down, when the anxiety is high, people turn to places like Christian radio stations for hope.
Be sure to join us. I've got all this and more. Kevin McCullough, your host, coming to you from my home stations in New York City. You can hear my own program live each weekday afternoon on AM 570 The Mission and AM570TheMission.com. Take a moment to follow Christian Outlook on Twitter at TC Outlook. That's TC Outlook. And follow me on Instagram at KMC Radio. Great to be with you. We'll begin right here at home at the gas pump. No matter where you're at in the country, if you had to fill up your gas tank this weekend, it probably hurt. There's no question the Biden administration's decision to stop buying Russian oil has contributed to the price spike. But the important thing to note is this. Fuel prices had already gone up 75% under the Biden administration. That is before any of the latest with Russia and Ukraine and Russian oil boycotts. I turned to Monica Crowley, who served in the Treasury Department under President Trump. I'm lying in bed at about 2:30 this morning, just, you know, awake. And I said, I know what the winning campaign message is going to be for 2022 and 2024. And this is it. Vote for me, and I'll turn the spigot on. Is that not the sum total? Think of domestic policy, think of inflation, think of war, think of trying to starve Russia and end Iran. I'll turn the spigot on. We'll end all of it.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're right. That successful candidates this November and going into 2024, they are going to make that point over and over again, or they will if they're intelligent enough to understand what we're dealing with here. Yeah, energy is built into literally everything we consume and everything we do. And when energy prices go sky high, as they are now, it directly affects everybody, not just at the gas tank, but every little thing that you buy, from toilet paper to a hamburger to your mascara. Everything has that higher price built into it.
What I don't understand, Monica, and you served a very controversial president in terms of how he communicated, but he wasn't controversial in his policies. His policies were clear. His policies unabashedly helped America, and he didn't have to explain why they were helping America. Americans knew they were helping, that the policies were helping them. But in the last 11 days that this conflict has gone on, I've been reminded of a lot of old things that your former boss, President Trump, said. And that was one of them was, if you vote for me, you're going to have $2 gas. If you vote for him, he's going to have $5, $6, $7 gas. When we understand that Europe and the Ukrainian conflict and Russia's role and Iran's attempt to get back into a significant role are so tied to this thing, why are we paying $130 for a barrel of oil to Putin when he's behaving the way we are? Why haven't we cut that off?
You're speaking in logical terms. We are not dealing with logical individuals. We're dealing with revolutionaries. whether it's Biden and his administration and the Democrats in Congress, the Democrats across the country, whether it's the establishment folks in the EU and across the world, whether it's communist tyrants like President Xi in China, doesn't matter. Stop looking for a logical explanation for any of this. This is about the Great Reset. This is about resetting the global economy and, frankly, our societies, reordering our politics, reordering everything. The reason that the Biden administration will not get our own oil out of the ground and our own natural gas out of the ground, as President Trump did when he got us to energy independence for the first time, is because energy is the biggest lever to affect the kind of revolutionary change they want in the U.S. and global economy. So they don't, you know, when the left comes out and says, well, we're doing this because of climate change and we want people driving electric cars. By the way, to drive an electric car, you need electricity, which is gained from coal. So right. You're dealing with circular arguments, but set that aside. Energy is literally the biggest sector that they can leverage to transform the economy into this collectivist socialist model as part of this one world government. I know it sounds pie in the sky, but that is actually what their objective is.
In short, the green agenda is as much about control as it is about anything related to carbon emissions. Of course, Russia's aggressive action on Ukraine has exposed the administration. Their first instinct this past week was to turn to Venezuela and Iran for more oil, as opposed to, say, Texas and Colorado. The other thing that has been exposed, Russia's efforts in sowing disinformation. Here's Elon Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council, my guest from this past week. So how does it work?
What, Russian propaganda, you mean?
Yeah, and why are they pumping this information into these places, and how is it starting to diminish?
Well, it's interesting, right, because we have become increasingly aware in recent years of this very broad-based Russian propaganda effort. The RAND Corporation, which is a California-based think tank, has called it a fire hose of falsehood because they need the pithy title for their study. But it has the ring of truth to it, because what you're seeing is this array of Russian state and private media, troll accounts, puppet accounts on social media that are all promulgating narratives in various ways, different narratives, right? Everything from commentary about the decline of the West to coronavirus misinformation, but all of it is geared towards injecting doubt in the stability of the West, injecting sort of concern about political processes in the West, and obscuring objective truth. So one of the most important moves that the European Union made over the weekend was to announce that it was on the territory of its member states that it was banning Russian channels that peddle disinformation, Russian channels like RT, which used to be known as Russia Today, Russian channels like Sputnik. This is a decidedly big deal because it marks the first concrete step towards a international consensus about the need to combat Russian disinformation.
It's kind of a double whammy that it's all coming down right now.
No, that's exactly right. And listen, you still have Russian channels that are churning out the Kremlin line messaging about the need to denazify Ukraine, the idea that sort of the propaganda that the Ukrainian leadership is all fascists, even though, incidentally, they have a Jewish president. But this is increasingly less and less persuasive. And it's less and less persuasive because the traditional targets of this sort of disinformation, which is intended to not necessarily to convince the international community of the need to move against Ukraine, but it's intended to confuse the issue enough to get the international community to not do anything.
Elon, do you think it's going to have a significant impact in terms of how the world deals with Russia trying to resolve Ukraine, and who knows what his goals are even beyond that?
I'm very bullish on what's happening in the early going, because there's two things that are happening simultaneously. First of all, Europe and the United States are beginning at long last to pay attention to the pernicious effects of Russian disinformation, to the narratives that the Russians are trying to push globally and identifying them for what they are. The second is that Ukraine, right, this much smaller, empirically much weaker country, is actually doing a tremendous job counterpunching in the information space. You're seeing a tremendous amount of social media content, a tremendous amount of media availability from Ukrainian officials. And they're doing yeoman's work in dislodging the primacy of Russia's narrative.
As we look at this disturbing war of naked aggression from Russia on Ukraine, the thing that has everyone nervous is the fact that Russia is a nuclear power. Putin very clearly wants us to think he'll use a nuclear weapon. To get insight into this nuclear question, I turn to Patty Jane Keller of the Heritage Foundation. What do we need to know about Putin's nuclear arsenal?
So we need to know that when it comes to strategic nuclear weapons, weapons that can hit the United States, Putin has about the same sort of force as the United States does. But what's really worrying that Americans need to know is that Putin also has an arsenal of over 2,000 of what we call non-strategic or tactical nuclear weapons. And these are smaller weapons that can be deployed in Europe and used on the battlefield. And actually, Putin in this category outnumbers the U.S. by at least 10 to 1. And this matters because Russia also incorporates the use of these nuclear weapons into its warfighting doctrine. According to Russian strategy, if Russia sees it's losing in a conventional fight, it reserves the right to employ a nuclear weapon to try to compel the other side to back down. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in Ukraine. Russia, its conventional military effort hasn't been succeeding and hasn't been able to take hold of any major Ukrainian cities. So Americans need to know this, and it's definitely not a likely scenario, but it's not impossible either.
Let's talk about what he's willing to do. Why were they willing to take fire and launch fire around those three power plants over the last week, Patty Jane? It seems to me that that is a reckless form of warfare that could have not only killed a lot of Ukrainians, but killed their forces, too.
Yeah, it's extremely reckless. I don't think we've confirmed whether these were intentional strikes or if they unintentionally hit the power plant, but honestly, it doesn't matter at this point. We've seen it to be Russian strategy to take aim at civilian centers and populations, and that's, you know, highly immoral and also shouldn't be necessary to his military goals. We know that launching an explosion at a nuclear facility doesn't have any sort of military purpose.
I don't know if he would really have any reserve or caution in saying he's going to launch a nuclear weapon. I mean, can we trust that he is as self-preservationist as we would like him to be?
What we know about Putin is that his number one goal, I think, is staying in power. You know, he needs to preserve his role as president of Russia. That's the main thing he wants. So he'll have to factor in whether using a nuclear weapon could impact his, you know, the preservation of his own power, of his own control over Russia. And you know, there's a reason to be optimistic that he'll hold back from using a nuclear weapon. He should know that it would unite the entire world in opposition against him even more than they already are. I'm not sure if his subordinates would even support the use of a nuclear weapon. So that's not to say we can trust him to not make that decision. As I was explaining before, it is part of Russian doctrine to employ nuclear weapons if it sees to be losing in a conflict. And I've heard Russia experts talk about how if Putin has a tool at his disposal, he is fully willing to use it.
Coming up, we'll hear from a Ukrainian Christian who has seen his hometown destroyed.
I'm feeling extremely sad that it's happening this way, but I also feel a large sense of pride of how they just stood up and fight right now.
When the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
The Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy believes in the calling to politics and public service. As one of the few programs of its kind based at a leading Christian university, we prepare students for exciting careers in this vital arena through a curriculum that combines rigorous study of America's founding principles with the latest tools of policy analysis. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun, so find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
The Ukrainian State Emergency Service now says that more than 2,000 Ukrainian civilians have been killed in the last week.
With no peace in sight, Ukraine's capital is emptying as Russian forces advance.
Детская больница, роддом.
Children's hospital? Maternity ward? Why were they a threat to Russian Federation? What kind of country is Russian Federation that is afraid of hospitals? Afraid of maternity wards and destroys them?
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. As we watch news footage come in from Russia's war on Ukraine, our hearts go out to all the victims, particularly the innocent civilians, as Russia goes after targets that have no military significance. Alex Oleksandr is a Christian from Ukraine. He married a Pittsburgh native, which helps explain why he was in the studio of Word 101.5 FM in Pittsburgh from the ride home with John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
To sit down, you told us today you watched the city that you grew up in essentially be destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was three rockets were flying just an hour and a half ago towards my city. It's basically that's where the international airport is for Kyiv. So it's a little like maybe 60 miles away from Kyiv. They were able to intercept two, and one actually landed. So far, it's only, you know, a couple wounded people, which is... We're really lucky that nobody really died, but it's just happened in
the beginning.
Yeah. So, literally just an hour and a half ago.
Now, you have family still in Ukraine, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Talk to us about that.
So my mom and my sister, after spending two nights in the basement of the garage, basically they made a decision to go west, and it was a perfect window for them to escape from this beginning of the war west, basically. So at first there was a lot of traffic coming, you know, as soon as it started, a lot of traffic started building up from Kyiv going to Lviv, which is western part of Ukraine, and people were sitting in the traffic for 6-7 hours, moving only 200 yards, and that's when I was telling my mom and sister, essentially, just stay put for now until it's going to clear up. And as soon as it clear up, they start traveling there. And luckily, they got really nice spot in one of the western cities in Ukraine, and they were able to reserve really nice extra spot where they can stay. So that's where they're at right now.
So they're safe.
They're safe. Thanks. Yeah, they're safe. Although, in the beginning, Russia even tried to hit that city with a ballistic missile, but they are not in the city. They are like more in a mountain area. So it's a little more reserve, you know, which, you know, atrocity of Russia's right now is unimaginable.
Yes,
right now.
Sure.
That they're trying to put scary tactics, you know, to hit every single city, basically telling everybody that you're not safe anywhere type of deal.
Alex, this is a difficult question, but talk about your feelings about having your country invaded.
It's tough. It's really tough. Seeing my people right now suffering and being in attack for 8 years now, almost up to date, and having this war, I knew it's going to come eventually because...
You just come to the point of accepting it?
Yeah, right now this is the time. This is the time when my people rise up against this aggressor who was trying to, you know, basically keep us by their side in captivity for almost 300 years. So this is the liberty, and I'm feeling extremely sad that it's happening this way. But I also feel, you know, a large sense of pride of how they just stood up and fight right now, and they're bringing them food, free food, into the cities that they captured, and those Russian soldiers bringing them food. They open up their trucks to give food, and none of the Ukrainians walked out to get that food. None of them. Mm. They said, get out. We need you to be out. Just one person said, and there was the Ukrainian fighter back in the days, in 1940s, he said that if country will pick food over their freedom, they will lose their freedom and they will lose their food. Mm. If they'll pick their freedom, they always will find the food. Yes. So that's it stuck with me.
It's hard to watch the horrors taking place daily in Ukraine right now. For many of us, prior to these last few weeks, we have not given much thought one way or another to Ukraine. But the Far East Broadcasting Company has been using the airwaves for gospel purposes in Ukraine for over 50 years now. Ed Cannon and Victor Akhtarov on FEBC join Bob Lapine from KKLA in Los Angeles.
Talk a little bit about FEBC's reach into Ukraine, the history there, what you guys have been doing, and for how long you've been doing it there.
Sure. Well, we've been broadcasting in the Russian language into Ukraine via shortwave for over 50 years. And we've had a tremendous response way back in the early days from people in that country who listen to the shortwave. They write in. We have piles of letters in the office that were all answered by our staff many, many years ago. But recently, we've evolved into a local FM network. We built 7 FM stations in Ukraine, staffed them with all Ukrainian nationals who understand the culture. They speak the local language. And now we've moved into social media platforms, Facebook Live, TikTok, and some other ones that old guys like me don't even know how to pronounce, but reaching millions of people via social media. And so it's a perfect setup to go into a wartime situation where people know who you are, they understand what you talk about, and when the chips are down, when the anxiety is high, people turn to places like Christian radio stations for hope.
Victor, you were born in Ukraine, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, I was actually born in a city where the war began.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your Ukrainian history and how you came to be the Ukrainian director for FEBC.
Well, I used to listen to FEBC broadcasts as a child growing up. As Ed just mentioned, we've been broadcasting in Russian and Ukrainian to the Ukrainian territory. And I grew up in the eastern Ukraine where everybody speaks Russian. So I'm one of those Ukrainians who are ethnic Russians. But as soon as the country opened up, the Soviet Union disintegrated, I joined FEBC and we started building stations throughout Russia and also started the ministry in Ukraine as well. It was limited in Ukraine because we concentrated on Russia, where the gospel was much more needed. But also started working in Ukraine. And then it was by God's providence, I think, that we opened the first Ukrainian station a year before the war started in 2016. And started broadcasting there. And of course, all these events started to happen, and our station was shut down, and we lost 4 of our volunteers. They were martyred for their faith.
So was this in Crimea where people were martyred?
No, it was in eastern Ukraine, just after Crimea, and the war started in eastern Ukraine, in the city of Slavyansk, and that's where our station is. People were thinking same thing will happen as it happened in Crimea, and it did not. So lawlessness was everywhere. And 4 of our brothers are volunteers. One of them is one of the most joyful broadcasters you would ever meet, were captured, and they were tortured for their faith. And I have a first-hand account how a lady who's not a Christian was telling me how they were martyred. It was a heartbreaking story. But God has been using FEBC from that one station to now have a network of 7 stations plus a huge network on new media. And it is beyond our expectations how many people listen to us today.
Coming up, Christian hope in Ukraine.
More people came to know Christ in these 7 days than in the past 7 months.
More with Ed Cannon and Victor Akhtarov when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. I'm Kevin McCullough. The visual images of war in Ukraine make us uneasy, but there's no doubt the reality on the ground is much worse than the images and the video can adequately convey. And yet, there is a spiritual work happening there that we should be tracking and praying for. Let's pick up the conversation with Bob Lapine on KKLA, with Ed Cannon and Victor Akhtarov of the Far East Broadcasting Company. Here's Victor.
So many people are just accepting Christ, teenagers, people who are in their 20s. And of course, we also have a team of counselors and people who are now scattered because of the war around throughout Ukraine. And we have about 35 people who are working nonstop, day and night. I'm telling the leader of the team, make sure that our people rest a little bit, because you cannot minister that, you know, for a week now. And she says, but we cannot stop because there are so many calls, so many people who are in distress, so many people who are seeking Christ. And this is the understatement, but more people came to know Christ in these 7 days than in the past 7 months. And we have about 1,000 responses a day. It's not like, you know, we don't have any influence. Now it is big. But we have four times as many listeners on social networks. We can see those people. So yes. It is exciting, overwhelming. It is a huge blessing in the midst of terrible tragedy.
I was surprised, Victor, and I did not realize this until really I started to dig in and learn more in light of the conflict here. The majority of Ukrainians profess faith in Christ. I saw Ukraine referred to as kind of the buckle of the Eastern European Bible Belt, that God is at work in Ukraine in some amazing ways and has been for years.
It is true and not true at the same time. A lot of people who profess to be Christians, what they mean is, I'm Ukrainian, thus I'm a Christian.
That's true in the United States too, right?
Well, not to that extent, believe me. You know, you ask them who is Abraham, and they think you're asking about Abraham Lincoln. So people who never opened the Bible in their lives are calling themselves Christians. So our approach is, of course, not to fight on that, you know, cultural kind of approach, but to say, as Christians, let's open the Bible and read the Bible. So we've been doing this for years, and if we're talking about Bible-believing Christians, it's about 3% maybe of Ukrainians who are truly following Christ. And there are some among the cultural people who are culturally Christian. There are some who are sincere, but very, very few. And so we have a lot of work to do in front of us.
Ed, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I appreciate your comment, Bob. We have the similar sort of thing here in the U.S. But in places like Ukraine, people attend church. There's big churches, beautiful churches, all over, and they have icons and saints, but I think people are missing the point that they need to know Jesus. Just like it says in Matthew chapter 7, there are many people who say, Lord, Lord, but on that final day they shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven because I never knew you. And I think this is what Victor's trying to point out. It's a culturally Christian nation desperately in need of the gospel, and we're really seeing that significantly now that people are worried, scared, and concerned, and they're seeking the truth of the gospel.
Victor, we've all been moved by the resolute bravery that we're seeing from Ukrainians who are saying, we will stand and fight for our freedom and for our country. We are not going to, we're just pass me a gun and I'm in the battle. What's behind that? Has that been traditionally the case with Ukrainians?
That's been traditionally the case with some Ukrainians, especially in the western parts of the country. So there was this kind of nationalistic movement in the west of Ukraine to move away from Russia for decades. But what's happening today is nobody expected that kind of unity of the country. Ukraine has been in relation with Russia for centuries, of course, but today Ukraine is so different from where Russia is moving. They are moving in a different way. They want to be part of Europe. They want to have democratic freedoms. They want to have free elections. Different presidents from, you know, well, once in a while. And unlike Russia, I think the Russian president did not realize how far away Ukraine is from Russia, culturally, politically, in a way of thinking, in a way of seeing the world, the future. So, and that brought this resistance that is fearless in Ukraine. And nobody really expected that the Ukrainian president would be so brave. He's a former comedian. He's just a guy, you know, like your next door neighbor. And what's happening today is just amazing. And so nobody expected this kind of resistance. But of course, the Russian army is, when you talk about sheer power of the Russian army, is so much stronger. So we don't know what the future will bring.
Coming up, is grace really that good?
People call grace dangerous, and I like to say it's only dangerous for the enemy.
When the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
The Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy believes in the calling to politics and public service. As one of the few programs of its kind based at a leading Christian university, we prepare students for exciting careers in this vital arena through a curriculum that combines rigorous study of America's founding principles with the latest tools of policy analysis. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun, so find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. I hope you were encouraged to hear of lives that are being changed in Ukraine, lives that have been united to Christ even as their earthly dwelling place is being destroyed. It's a great reminder to all of us about what our next guest calls, in the title of his new book, The Grace Message. The subtitle, Is the Gospel Really This Good? I'll give you the short answer, yes, yes, and yes. Andrew Farley joined my colleague and friend Bob Burney on The Word, WRFD, in Columbus, Ohio.
Do we really need another book on grace?
Yeah, we do. The average Christian thinks that grace and mercy are the same thing. You know, it's for when you fall, when you fail. We look at God as a banker who's canceled our debt. We look at him as a real estate agent who's found us a new place to live someday called heaven. But grace is bigger than all of that. I mean, grace means we have a new heart. Grace is what inspires and motivates us. Titus 2 even says the grace of God is what teaches us to say no to sin. So it's pretty clear lots of us were still saying yes to sin. So apparently we need more of God's grace, not less of it.
One of the things you say in the book that really caught my attention, and I quote, "Many people sitting in our churches today are getting a lightweight understanding of God's grace." Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, you know, we think grace is mercy. I mean, mercy is great. Mercy is when you're going 100 miles an hour down the freeway and the police officer pulls you over and says, "I'm not going to give you a ticket today, Bob." That's mercy. But grace is when he pulls out a $1,000 bill and hands it to you. I mean, that's outlandish. That's ridiculous. That's over the top. But that's God's grace. It's enjoying everything for free because Jesus paid it all.
But you also say, and I quote, a guy named Andrew Farley that I think you've heard of, they don't see the empowerment of God's grace, so they seek to lessen it, temper it, or balance it with something else. I found that fascinating, and I'd love to hear you elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, you know, people call grace dangerous, and I like to say it's only dangerous for the enemy because God's grace is inspiring and motivating. And, I mean, Romans even says that sin will not master you because you're under grace. So saying we need less grace is like saying we need less victory over sin. It makes no sense.
You begin your exploration of grace by beginning with the Old Testament law. That's an approach I have not seen on the topic of grace. Why?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of books on grace and lots of pastors talking about grace, and that's wonderful. But if we're not careful, we end up with a very generic view. God is good. God is gracious. God is kind. I mean, God is nice like Santa Claus. And if that's all we understand, then we've fallen short of the true message. So in the grace message, I take about 15 chapters to outline this simple fact that you need to see the law as it truly stands. It's 600-plus rules staring you in the face. There's no way you can keep it. So as we realize the stringency of the law, then we realize we need God's grace, and against the backdrop of that impossible standard of God's law, God's grace shines even more brightly. So I think we need to be acquainted with what law really is. It's not choose your favorite parts. It's not multiple choice. It's not a buffet line at your local restaurant. The law is an all or nothing proposition, and that's why we need God's grace instead.
You're certainly not implying that the grace of God eliminates the consequences for sin.
No, not at all. In fact, I mean, planet Earth comes at you and there's consequences and you reap what you sow and all of that. But that's just planet Earth and earthly consequences, as mm-hmm. you mentioned. I am saying that we're not reaping the spiritual consequences. I mean, the wages of sin is death, and Jesus died, and he took the wages, and there are no wages left. So that's what we can be thankful for in grace, but I don't want to wake up tomorrow morning and be forgiven but miserable. I don't want to wake up tomorrow and be righteous but miserable. So it's a beautiful thing to be forgiven and righteous, but who wants to be miserable? And sin, well, sin will only make mm-hmm. you miserable.
Who is the target audience?
Yeah, well, I found myself on the floor of my apartment, and I was begging God for answers, Bob. I was 19 years old, and I was doing everything the church said to do. I was reading my Bible 4 and 5 hours a day. I was sharing my faith with everybody that I met. I was in church every time the doors were open, and yet I was crying out to God, saying, God, I'm doing everything, and I don't feel closer to you. I don't feel like I'm growing spiritually. I'm busy, but my formula is broken. So where did I go wrong? And, Bob, it was not a lightning bolt out of heaven. It was more like 10 years of replacing old thoughts with new thinking. And at the center of that was God's grace. So I wrote the grace message to rescue Christians from the misery of rule-keeping and law-based religion as we get a deeper understanding that God actually likes us and loves us and delights in us and celebrates us and dances over us. I mean, that's what we need to soak in. We need to soak in the love and grace of God, and that's what transforms us.
Our time has literally, and I mean literally, flown by, but here is the final question I try to ask every author that I interview. Someone picks up the grace message, is the gospel really this good? They read it cover to cover. They put it down. What is the take-home that you want every individual to receive when they finish your book?
Maybe you have heard all your life that God is in love with a future version of you, the future version that prays more and loves more and does more at church. Maybe you've heard that your whole life, but I want you to know that God embraces who you are, that you are off the charts, okay with him. Scale of 1 to 10, you're an 11 because Jesus made it so. Your righteousness is real. You're totally forgiven and loved, and that is the true motivation for the Christian life.
Coming up, perspective.
I want to keep reminding myself I belong to another kingdom, an eternal kingdom, an unshakable kingdom that will triumph and will face opposition, face disruption. And certainly as the last days unfold, we may be seeing some of that today.
Philip DeCourcy of Know the Truth in the final segment of The Christian Outlook. Stay with us. Before I
spoke a word. Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with The Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to The Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. We see the brutality of war in Ukraine, and we heard about the wonders of the gospel in our last segment. So, how do we make sense of these two truths? Philip DeCourcy, a voice you might recognize from the program Know the Truth, joined Scott Furrow on KKLA in Los Angeles.
You mentioned how Ukraine has been a powerful country for the gospel. I learned that they are the largest missionary-sending country in all of Europe. And now that's something that's being hindered here. And we shouldn't be mistaken. I've heard some people talk about, you know, maybe Putin is opening up Russia to the gospel and other stuff. He is not. That's just not a true statement at all.
No, I've been directed with several mission agencies where we support someone through Crew with the Jesus film, and my interactions with him and with others in recent years, the shutters are coming down. And if anything, the state church is being elevated. because it's in the pocket of the powerful, and evangelical and free churches are under scrutiny. And, you know, again, that point is not to be missed. You know, the evil one is a liar, and he's a murderer.
Yes.
And the human heart is swift to shed blood. And when you've got the flesh, the world, and the devil in alliance, war is the result. And certainly there can be a spiritual warfare dimension, even in the macro arena of politics and history, that seeks to disrupt redemptive history. I mean, I think we've got to keep those parallel worlds. You know, there's history that's unfolding, man, governments. There'll be war, there'll be peace, there'll be prosperity, there'll be poverty, so on and so forth. But you know, Scott, as a pastor and as a biblicist, that there's redemptive history, the history of God redeeming Israel, the history of God redeeming the church in this church age. History is his story. And when we look at history, at times, myself included, we get caught up, right, in what's under our nose and what's before our eyes. The headlines, the politics, national issues. But I want to keep reminding myself, I belong to another kingdom, an eternal kingdom, an unshakable kingdom that will triumph and will face opposition, face disruption. And certainly as the last days unfold, darkness, demonic activity, falsehood, political overreach, it's going to multiply and it's going to mushroom. And again, we may be seeing some of that today.
Yep.
Because the world wants to fashion us into its mold, and I need to keep hearing the call to stay in my lane. You know, think about 2 Timothy 4, Paul's dying. It's his last letter. I have fought the good fight. I've kept the faith. And listen to this, and I have run my course. He stayed in his lane. Paul knew why God created him, and these passages called out of darkness, called to peace, called to be a servant of Jesus Christ, called upward and onward, called to remain. They afford me some handrails to stay steady in life.
That wraps up this edition of The Christian Outlook. There's much more of that conversation between Scott Furrow and Philip DeCourcy. Catch it on ChristianOutlook.com. Check my daily podcast on Kevin McCullough Radio, anywhere you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, it's there. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has been brought to you in part through the partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and David Plessayen, Mike Cook, Alex Perez, and Nick Malone, I'm Kevin McCullough. Join us again next time for The Christian Outlook.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.